וואלק, עוד פרק אדיר במיוחד, והפעם הפרק היה באנגלית, הפרק עם קורי גיל שוסטר. דיברנו הרבה על הפרויקט שלו, של Ask a Israeli, Ask a Palestinian. בשבע שנים האחרונות קורי מסתובב בישראל ומראיין ישראלים ופלסטינאים עם שאלות שהוא מקבל מאנשים מרחבי העולם, בניסיון להנחיח תשובות של אנשים רגילים, יומיומיים, לגבי הסכסוך, ולא רק פוליטיקאים או קיצוניים משני הצדדים. מאוד מאוד התחבר לניסיון של ה-85 שאלות, של להסביר שלכל אחד יש את הסיפור שלו, וכל תשובה היא לגיטימית ואפשרית. היה פרק סופר סופר מעניין, דיברנו קצת על הסכסוך, ועל איך בכלל שאלות יכולות לעזור בפתרון קונפליקטים. המון המון הצלחה והנאה, תהנו. יאלק, מתחיל.
אתם מאזינים לשאלה טובה, פודקאסט על שאלות, עם אסף פאול כהן.
I told you 39.
Yeah, okay, so...
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, 39 was, who makes you feel good about yourself?
Jeez, that's a really hard one. It has to be a specific person, or it's a concept, like a group or something?
Yeah,
you could take it... Not, well, okay, I'm a very negative person, so there's really nobody that makes me feel good about myself. Like no single person that I can think of. The only thing that's very nice is every so often I get emails, fan mail from mm-hmm. people about the project. That makes me feel good. I get some hate mail too, but yeah. I seem to get a lot more people who say, thank you for doing this. It's super interesting. And it, I don't know, changed my mind is probably the wrong way of looking, phrasing, but it made me think about Israelis and Palestinians differently. And that I'm always happy about. I feel like I did my job.
Do you remember a specific response you felt was specifically important to you?
Yeah. So the people I'm thinking about often when I'm doing this are in the Arab and Muslim world, because they have the most skewed, the most in uninformed view of Israelis and Palestinians, actually, strangely. And I love when I get emails from people from the Arab and Muslim world saying, thank you for showing me something different. I was really shocked. It's completely different than what we're told. And that's just as regular Israelis speaking, who are generally not even saying very nice things. That's what always makes me laugh. They're just being super honest and direct, and it's a little bit barbaric sometimes. But the fact that they are humanized in the eyes of people we're technically at war with, to me, is a huge deal. I think that's really important. Same if somebody who's Jewish or Israeli says, wow, I saw something Palestinian and it made me think. I'm always happy with that. I think that's the goal here.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. We'll give a little bit of context. I'm super excited. I got to know our guest. We'll introduce him in a second through YouTube, right? So I was into questions and asking, and my brand name is like Ask, okay? So I searched the web and I got to see your project, and strangely, I got to binge on it, and it was super addictive, right?
It's right.
And we'll try to understand like the what makes it addictive or impactful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so what is Ask? Well, how do you explain it?
It's a project on YouTube where people send me questions from outside, or sometimes inside as well. They want to know something from Israelis, from Palestinians, like, for example, what do you think of Bibi Netanyahu, or why do Jews not believe in Jesus? That was another one. I get that a lot, actually. I still get it. What for Palestinians, why won't you accept a peace treaty? Things like that. Those mm-hmm. kind of questions. Usually political, always from where I'm getting it from, it's from their point of view, what they see in the media. So often the question sounds ridiculous to people here because they don't understand that people outside just see it differently. Then I take those questions. Sometimes I have to change them a little to make it understandable to Israelis and Palestinians. And I go to the streets of Israel and Palestine, and I walk around and I ask people questions. And that's it. And then I just ask, hi, can I ask you a question? I do a YouTube project. I explain to them it's on YouTube, what it is. And say, can I ask you? And, you know, most people say no, and some people say yes. And whatever they say is in there. I don't edit out anything. And I ask usually 8, maybe sometimes 10 people. The minimum is 8. The maximum, depends on what it is like 10, 12. to get an idea of what people think. So you can't watch one video and think, oh, I now know everything about this topic. You obviously can't. But if you watch a bunch of videos of each side, you get a story told to you about what they think. And that's what it has become. It wasn't actually even, it didn't start out that way exactly, but that's what it became.
Okay, so I have a lot of questions out because it's super, you talk about it like it's a bit mundane or simple in a way. And it's... We'll see how simple it is maybe to just take a camera and go outside, but it's mind-boggling to actually do it and spread it. And
it's
have
very simple. I'm actually shocked nobody else does this. Yeah. Every time, I'm like, why isn't everybody doing this? I don't get it, but okay.
Right, so we'll talk about it and what were the origins and your motivation to do it. But yeah, so I got all the listeners hyped, and who are we talking to today? So happy to introduce all...
People online?
No, they'll hear it later.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Live or something.
Corey is a curator of the Ask a Palestinian project we talked about. His day job is a director at the International Program in Conflict Resolution and Mediation in the Tel Aviv University, where we're recording now with beautiful views. And basically, you say you're a guy that walks with a video camera asking people their opinions related to Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Well, my joke is I'm a dick walking around with a camera because I really do try to challenge people and ask. The more inappropriate it is, the happier I am. Like, the more challenging it is and the person gets even a little bit offended, I'm happy. Because I think everyone needs to be challenged in their views.
So it's interesting. I'll ask because the... What are the regular questions you get asked? Because you get the questions from viewers, right? Sent to you.
Yeah. So I have Gmail addresses and people send me questions that way. And I review them every few days, weeks. Kind of depends on, you know, if I have time. Through Facebook, sometimes people send me questions. Sometimes when somebody comes with me, they get to ask their own question, regardless of what it is. And I have to accept what it is, even if I don't like it. I just do it. And then when I see that people are asking, sometimes I think questions to me are not that interesting, or I just think, well, this is going to go nowhere. What's the point? But if people ask them enough, then I figure there's enough people out there who care about the answer. So that was the Jesus one. I would, because I'm not religious. I don't believe in God. I'm Jewish, but I really don't believe in anything. And so when people are trying to understand why Jews don't believe in Jesus, that seems like even crazier to me. I don't get it, but okay. But I got it. So I received that question so often that finally I asked it, and now I have 2 million views, which I did not expect at all. I just thought, fine, I'll make them happy, a couple of people, and I have the most views on anything to do with Jesus.
Yeah, so I think the power is having genuine, authentic questions from people that want to hear the answers and feeling they...
And genuine responses. I think that's what people react to. They are shocked that Israelis are so... And Palestinians are so direct. Israelis are just more direct. They have a different way to them, and I can explain that. But the people outside in Europe and America mostly are very surprised that not only are people so direct, but they're direct on camera. So, you know, some other cultures are very direct, but they wouldn't do it on camera. And I'm kind of using that fact, in a sense, to do this.
Yeah, and I think you get kind of naive, authentic questions. You get also very opinionated questions. And can you give an example of one that is like you can understand from the guy that was asking?
Ooh, yeah, I got some good ones. So one of the ones that'll come out soon is... to Jews, all Jews, it wasn't just religious Jews, if a non-Jew, a goy, was dying on Shabbat, would you desecrate Shabbat to save a non-Jew? And it was part of an email where I eventually figured out that the guy was incredibly anti-Semitic. I was shocked, but like, because at first I was like, oh, it's interesting, just this philosophical question. He then said later, for example, at the Gaza border, the reason that Israeli soldiers shoot at Gazans is because they see non-Jews as less and want to kill them. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't save the life of a non-Jew on Shabbat. So I went and I figured, okay, so this one I'm not just going to do religious, even though technically that's only, we know here, it's only religious people would even think that way, if they thought that way. But I figured I'll do like a cross section of Israelis in general. So I did like 3 Haredim, 2 regular religious Israelis, and the rest were secular. And actually, nobody said they wouldn't. One guy said he would check with his rabbi, and I actually got pissed off at that answer, but I tried not to show that. So you get people who are asking what I call gotcha questions. They're asking questions they think that they know who the Jews are or the Palestinians are, and they're going to show, they're going to expose, because they think everyone's lying in the world to them.
Right. So,
and what they don't know is that both sides are incredibly in your face who they are. They will tell you anything about who they are.
So like the differences would be that the gotcha question, you kind of know what answer you're looking for and trying to get the other person to say
they
that.
Think they're going to get a very specific response. And I know, because I know Israelis, chances are you're not going to get what they think they are. But who knows? I could be wrong.
Right.
I just asked, I think I finished it. No, I haven't finished it. Do you want to conquer Jordan as a country? Because technically in the Bible, it actually says the Jews controlled parts of Jordan. And I know a few religious people who actually say, yeah, maybe someday, maybe. I actually, by chance, met some guy who was actually very secular who believes we should conquer Jordan. He was a bit of a lunatic. And then funny enough, some religious people said, no, we shouldn't. So sometimes I'm surprised by the answers too, because I don't know every sector of Israeli society. But the idea is just to get a cross-section, and yeah, if one of eight says the opposite of what I think they're going to say, okay, that's great, no problem.
Yeah, I think the magic occurs, and you want to see different responses, because they are so very different from one another, and you get surprised. Maybe the feeling of stereotype breaking sometimes makes you jitter in your seat, right? Yeah. But sometimes it's nice, and you get a different perspective, and you get a surprise in that sense.
I often do.
Yeah.
The group that surprised me the most are Jewish settlers in the West Bank. They're, because my perception as a liberal, semi-lefty Canadian living in Israel is they're going to be very radical and extreme. And they're actually, I mean, they're delusional. No offense to settle. Oh, no, I'll tell them to their face. I have no problem. They're delusional in the terms of what they think is going to happen, in my opinion. They think Palestinians will just understand that Jews control, and they'll just get used to it, and that'll be all. It'll all be okay. In that sense, I mean, it's delusional. But they're quite moderate in their views and quite accepting, generally. Not a couple of loonies, but...
Yeah. Also, I think growing up in Jerusalem, we before the wall, we had a more of a contact with the Arab population around us. And you had more examples of different people and humanized examples.
Yes.
And I think that the settlers, in that sense, have a more... I wouldn't say maybe liberal, but very coexistent than most Tel Avivians or people in Haifa or Sharon, because they know and they get along, right? So it's a broader, right? There's more conflict.
I have some criticism about their version of coexistence, right? Meaning the Jews control and the Arabs don't. So that's not very democratic, and that's not the if you're looking at the way the world works, I mean, that doesn't seem very fair to me. But, however, I mean, anything positive is positive. Anything is good is good.
Right.
If you accept your neighbor for who he is, I'm happy with that. I have no problem. I don't care where people live. So,
right. Okay, yeah. So we talked a bit about the questions. There's tons of topics we want to try and cover that I find interesting, both trying to see the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in perspective, also about the questions, right? So there's tons of data, in a sense, and tons of responses you got from different questions.
Mm-hmm.
What I find... So, okay, so before we go into all that, how do you start? What happened? Why did you take a camera?
Why did I do this?
Yeah.
It all started with, as usual, with an internet argument of... because there's a lot of people on Facebook and forums. I don't even know if forums exist anymore because I don't check them, but let's say Twitter. I don't know. People arguing about this conflict, and they are not Israelis and they are not Palestinians. Some may be Jews and some may be Arabs. It's mainly a lot of people who are unconnected having arguments about this conflict, and they think they know everything. And why do they think they know everything? They found a video that substantiates their views. And my point, because I was unemployed, I was finished my thesis and I was unemployed, so I was on these things, which was a mistake. And you get into these arguments, and they would always come up with a YouTube video. And then somebody, and I would say, guys, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, I live here. That's not the way people think. Yeah, sure, you can find one person who thinks anything. And you can't then project that to everybody. And somebody said, French-Canadian woman, says, well, what are you going to do? Go out and ask everybody? And when she said that, I had in my mind, I was like, wait, I have a video camera. Why am I not just walking around asking people these questions? Because I do it anyways. I'm a Canadian who lives here. Now I know much more about the conflict, but let's say when I first came here 20 years ago, or 30 years ago actually, I would ask people, so what do you think of this? What do you think of that? That's what a lot of people who are new or tourists do. Why am I not just recording that, those honest conversations between people? So I went out to see, actually it was more interesting, as I said, I have this idea to do this in this forum, which I don't know if it's Facebook or not, doesn't matter. And I said, give me a question, because I wanted to do it within the parameters, the framing of a question, and I'll get into why in after. And I asked for a question, and it was very interesting that 50 people in this forum, whatever, nobody dared ask a question. Everybody knew something about Israelis. They all knew everything there, but nobody dared ask a question. And I thought that was interesting and funny, because all these people, they know everything, but yet they're not willing to ask. They didn't know how to change their mindset. So finally, somebody said something about a one-state solution. I said, can I turn that into a question and go ask people? And he gave me permission. So that was my first video.
Wow. I especially like that the birth of the Ask Project came to be from a question, right? So Why not do it? And then you take a step back, because that's a lot of times what you do with a question. Mm-hmm. What do I think about the one-state solution?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why not do it then? I especially like the one that you did about, do you think most people in Lebanon want peace, Lebanon? And then why don't we have it? Then the follow-up questions really breaks it down in a sense, right?
Yeah, so that's the idea. So what I figured out very quickly was people have a simple answer and they speak in slogans because that's what they hear. And no, we're human beings. We're not, I mean, no offense to, includes me. We're not that smart as people, as species. So it's hard to keep all that, those varying views, all the different aspects of what we think and how to explain it in one quick sentence. You just can't do it. So what I realized is people were answering in slogans, and you have to then say, okay, what does that mean? Now, I understood what they meant because I've lived here for a long time. So at least I think I understand what they mean. But I would have to ask, okay, what do you mean by that? Or what if we did this? Because the idea is to get as much information as possible. And even then, a lot of times people watch the videos and they come to completely different conclusions than I thought. But that's what's interesting about it. So you have to ask follow-up questions. What do they mean? What do they mean by that term? And you get people to think about it because people, again, people think in these simplistic, slogany ideas, which maybe they understand, maybe they don't. And even that shows something.
Yeah, I think I've been to Romania now in the Rosh Hashanah with a Clear and their family, and I ran to the like a bookshop and grabbed a couple of cheap books, and I saw the Animal Farm. I was like, okay, this is well overdue. I'm like nodding every time people talk about it, but I haven't read. So I started, and the concept of dumbing down the rules and just making it four legs good, two legs bad, right? So very simplified. Small chalash, yamin chazak, right? Mm-hmm. So there must be something more to life, right? Let's talk a bit. And I think with the media, we talked about the last episode with the Ornat Cohen about fake news and just spreading the videos you saw. I've seen something that justifies my point of view. Here, see it. Very shallows down the pool of meaningful talk, right? And with your videos, you have YouTube, right? You could store it wherever, and it could be long, and it's okay to be unedited. And if you have 10 minutes or 5 minutes in a Chatzot 12 to talk about your stuff and Bibi, it has to exclamate, right?
Yeah, and it has to be framed in a certain way, and then you have editors, and you have people checking you. And this is great. It's just me. Right. And it's the people. It's not even about me. It's about the people who are saying it, and they just say what they want. So it's a different thing.
Yeah. So I think it shallows up the spikes and all the dumbing it down to people and really bringing forth an opportunity to have a conversation or to take different points of view on a question, right? Because I think one thing I've led to, I've understood about questions, it's their You can't stop by acting on them. Okay, so if you see some writing on the wall, you read it. It's Ottomanus, and with questions as well. You read a question and your mind can't rest until you have an answer of your own, right? So seeing your videos, you have your questions and you automatically try to compare to other people's responses. Mm-hmm. And that sense of complexity to the subject is great. Yeah.
What I'm hoping happens, and I don't know if it does, but I'm really hoping that it's similar to, let's say, satire on TV to make a point. So people will watch the video. Israelis, let's say, will watch the videos, or Palestinians, and they'll hear someone with similar views to them, but then they'll say, "Oh, do I really sound like that? Wait a second, maybe I should think about what I believe." And I think we all need to be challenged in our beliefs, because just having beliefs doesn't mean you're right. So that's what I want people to do. It doesn't mean you change your views completely. It's not even the point. I mean, the idea is we should constantly be questioning what's going on, mostly in a place of conflict. Is what we're doing, is it fair? Is it right? Is it, you know.
Then why do it, though? Like, what's your goal in this project, and what do you hope to achieve, or what impact do you see?
Yeah. I studied conflict studies. I did a master's in conflict studies, and my way of explaining conflict studies is you can't understand a conflict unless you know what it's really about. And this, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is a great, this is kind of how I sell the program sometimes to foreign students, is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict has all aspects of every other conflict in some way. Political, land, power, identity, economic, it has aspects of everything. And multiple layers, layer on layer on layer, and they're all interwoven. So the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is a great place to learn about conflicts in general. And because it's so complex, you have all these people who mix in their different ideas of power and identity and land and all those things that I mentioned. They all get interwoven, if you want to actually solve it, which I don't think is actually the goal. I was kind of hoping at the beginning maybe you could create a dialogue between Israelis and Palestinians, but I quickly realized that's not going to happen. But at least you can understand it as much as possible. It's impossible to get a solid idea of what it really is, but you get a sense. So what I get from people, for example, I'll just give a random example. Now that maybe Bibi will be the prime minister, maybe not, but I noticed in the US, in left-wing circles, they were saying, aha, Bibi's not going to be the prime minister. Now the next Gantz is going to make peace. They're viewing Israeli politics as between peace and not peace.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with it at the moment. I mean, I do hope Gantz actually sits with the Palestinians, but that's different. That has nothing to do with the elections at all. But people project what they think is going on here because of what they want or what they think is going on. And all I want to say is, guys, at least know what's going on. Deal with what is. Don't deal with what you wish it was or what you hope it isn't. Or deal with what it is within that context. And the same way, I roll my eyes at a lot of Israeli and Palestinian things. But I still have to deal with it. I don't believe in religion, for example, but there are people who really, obviously a lot of people here believe in God and religion, and I have to respect that. I have to understand that. I have to view it within that context. So the purpose of the videos is, in that sense, is understanding everything from each person's perspective. Doesn't mean they're right or you agree. Right. It just means, now I know about it. That's it.
So trying to hashtag it, right? So in information-wise, getting a different way of getting information from people, right?
Yeah. Getting it from the source, not from through the media, because every media wants to, they come with their own lenses, their own glasses of what's going on here, and they misreport, I think, what's going on. I mean, people call that because they're anti-Semitic, or the Palestinians say it's because they hate Palestinians. It's very funny how we're exactly the same. Yeah. Learn it from the source. That's all I'm saying. Figure out what people think.
Right. There's also a journalists think if the story is important, relevant, and urgent, right? And hearing about a Palestinian in Shechem, what he thinks about how we can... solve the water problem isn't urgent. It might be relevant. It is kind of important, but it's not urgent, right? So it doesn't get to the media. So we have to take the back channels of of other media. Also, like, it's hard to talk about these things face to face, right? So if we would have, you said there's a problem of the dialogue, right? It brings out the information. People might change their mind, might not, but there's not aftermath of contemplating together, right, or something like that.
Well, there's two things. First of all, it's all emotional, right? This, in many ways, conflict is emotion. So if we didn't have emotion, we wouldn't have any conflicts. So a lot of it is the emotionality of dealing, and we're baboons basically. So we're staring at each other and we're trying to get more and more tough. I'm going to win. No, I'm going to win. So everything becomes about the emotions of it. And what always happens, always in these things, is you go from topic to topic to topic to topic, and nothing gets resolved in these dialogues ever.
Right.
I mean, it just amazes me, because I love those dynamics of you cannot get any group of people, no matter how logical they think they are, to sit and focus on the one issue. They bring in every other issue because they emotionally want to win. They just feel they want to win. And so nothing gets decided. Nothing gets is really... Now, maybe they heard you. Hopefully they heard you a little bit. But usually it kind of reinforces your own views. That usually happens. The nice thing about a screen is you're a passive observer. So you get to watch people argue even your own point and go, oh, do I really sound that way? Huh, that's interesting. Oh, I never thought about that. It just brings you out of it. And that's something that I have to remind myself, because I am a very hot-tempered person. I get into fights with everybody everywhere. Bad habit.
Nice funny going conflict, to resolution. Conflict resolution.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's why,
how
that's
ironic.
Why I'm good at it. No, the resolution part, I'm terrible. At the conflict, understand. I know what's going on as I'm doing it. I know it's a mistake, what I'm doing. I know, absolutely. But there is that thing in conflict where I call it, you take two steps back and you observe the situation. And through a screen, through a YouTube video, through watching people, being an observer, that's helpful. Because you take the emotions out of it and you just kind of look at it for what you think it is. Or,
right.
And you learn more that way, because it's not, doesn't have a direct impact on you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's the topic from theater. UNESCO has the theater, I think... where it's there's a temporal or a geographical gap between the viewer and what happens. So it might happens in Imaikara or something in China.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's not on our culture, right? Or you have something that is very in the back, historic, right? So it's not about us.
That's right.
And you detach the emotion. And then
but it's a metaphor of maybe something happening today.
And then you have the eureka moment, but you detach the emotional part.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
I was thinking maybe taking it to politics also here in Israel, right? Because I've seen you in one of the video talk about it. It's hard to have people talk face to face because it's too emotional and they just talk past each other.
Yeah.
But having the question framed or the topic framed and getting different responses, you have a civilized, democratized kind of discussion in a way.
Yeah.
And it could be lending from like millennials' point of view that you don't want to call someone because it's intrusive. Then let's do asynchronic like debating maybe. So that could be interesting, like taking it from a...
Yeah. So sometimes I do, if I have the chance to bring an Israeli and a Palestinian together to debate, once in a while I do it just to show people the dynamics. But yeah, it's not really going to be very helpful. Other than the other side of face-to-face, the good side of face-to-face is we want both these cultures... they want the person they're speaking to like them. They do.
Right.
So my best example is in one of the videos of this kid. He must have been like 20. And he barely spoke English and he only spoke Arabic. And we figured out he wanted to add me on Facebook in a Palestinian village. And I was there as an Israeli. I was with an Israeli guy, actually. And so they knew we were Israeli. That wasn't the issue. But then we got someone to translate, and we quickly understood that he wants to kick all the Israelis off the land. And he said, it's his duty. He has to. And I go, but you added me on Facebook. We're now Facebook friends. Yeah. He goes, what does one have to do with the other? Like, I might like you. We could even be friends. But my job is to kick you off the land. And we're seeing it through a naive 20-year-old. So, I mean, hopefully right. when he grows up, he won't be quite as extreme. But I just thought that was hilarious. That's hysterical. That's such a microcosm of this conflict, of the complexity of he right. might want to even be friends with me. Maybe he would even, if he could, he can't get into Israel, but he might even want to come visit me. I don't know. I don't know what his, you know, what he would accept. But I just thought that was very funny.
Yeah, it's there's tons of examples that show the irony and, like, as it oof.
Yeah. yeah. And if you, that's the another aspect, if you can add humor in things, it really does
right.
melt away all the emotion because it just switches your mood to something else. So even in the most absurd situations, I'm trying to throw some humor into it.
Right.
Which, you know, just, because you can't take this all so seriously all the time. That's another thing. And some people get mad at me because of that. Some people think that I'm, you know, trying to make fun of people. And I'm like, no, I'm trying to figure out how to change people's views and get them to see it a different way. That's all.
Yeah, so I have two questions. One, we'll start with this one. What do you think, like, the relations with your project and taking conflict resolution from a psychological point of view, and what context does it help? What does it do with stereotype thinking?
Oh, that's really complicated, because one of the things I struggle with most is that I don't have the best memory, so thinking of the names of the theories or explaining right. the theories really well, but as people are speaking, I'm plugging into what I learned. I just don't know how to show that in a video, because then it sounds like I'm Mr. Know-It-All. Plus, I always get people's, like, you know, if it was, I don't know, what's his name, Vamik Volkan, there's, like, famous, you know, some people, some psychologists, social psychologists, who've spoken about conflicts, and then I always get their names wrong or whatever, so I don't do that. But I'm always struggling with the idea of wanting to explain to people how the dynamics of what's going on in front of me that I'm dealing with at that moment, it's actually really common. This is what happens in conflicts, and it doesn't just happen here. It happens in Kosovo and in Congo, and, you know, culture dictates a bit, but a lot of it is all very similar. So I struggle with that and how to throw that in. Then at the same time, you brought up the other part of it, is that I feel guilty in that I'm replicating over and over people's stereotypes of, because Palestinians, when they're answering, Israelis do this too a little bit. Everyone does everything to a certain extent. So right. anything I say, the other side does it. But some cultures forefront one aspect and back end a different aspect. So in Palestinian culture, just to give you an example, your social standing in terms of your family is very important. So people will often answer me thinking, because I've checked this with a lot of people, thinking, what would my father think as I'm answering this? What will my brothers think? What will my family think? It's not even so much the Palestinian people. It's more about their family. Am I being true to my nation in that sense, or to my family in that sense, and not getting into trouble? So a lot of times, I suspect, and I've been told by a lot of Palestinians, and I have no idea how to cut through this, so if anyone has an idea, I'll do it. I need to sound tougher than I really think. So I'll give a good example. Years and years ago, there's a video where I asked, would you help a Jew on the side of the road? I asked Palestinians. And I asked Israelis, would you help an Arab on the side of the road? And I kept it very vague in that Jew and Arab, not Israeli and Palestinian, I tried to remove politics from it. What he understood was a settler. This guy asked, doesn't really matter. He said, yes, if I saw a Jew on the side of the road, I would help him. Years later, a friend of mine says, a Palestinian friend of mine says, I had a really funny experience. A friend of mine said, years ago, I was interviewed by this fat, bald Canadian, and that's me, he asked me, would I help a Jew and a settler? Actually, he understood it as settler, but that's not what I asked. And this is what he says, the whole night I couldn't sleep. What if my father heard my voice? Because actually, he's not on film. You hear his voice. And what if my father or brothers heard my voice? They would kill me for what I said. I should have said I would kill him. That's what I should have said. That's the safe thing to say. And this friend is telling me this because he's one of the very few Palestinians I know who says there's so many contradictions in Palestinian society. And I think it's important we talk about them. And most Palestinians don't like to do their dirty laundry, mostly in front of the Jews. That's even worse. And I love dirty laundry for my own people too, my own family. I get in trouble all the time for telling our dirty laundry. So if my sister is listening, she knows what I'm talking about. But the point is that people say things often because of what they think others want to hear. It's true on the Israeli side to a certain extent. You don't want to be, the worst thing you could be is Smoleni, a leftist. Right. That's the worst thing. So sometimes people will sound tougher, I think, than they are. Because they don't want to be thought of too... Israelis are just more... They don't care what other people think as much. So Palestinians, it's more... You see it more.
Yeah. Representing your narrative with pride, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then they... When they clue in... Because sometimes they don't realize what I'm doing. Sometimes they think it's just for Israelis. Sometimes they don't understand, you know, international. See that... You know, I explain everything before, but a lot of times they don't get it. I notice that. But you know, even with the answers I'm getting, there is a bit of, you know, I have to represent sometimes my people.
Yeah.
Is it entirely honest? I don't know.
Right. It's hard. You need to try to personalize it, right? And getting there. And I think a lot of times just adding in your opinion or what do you feel really helps make it more salient and...
Exactly. So sometimes I'll realize they're trying to speak for their entire people, and I'll say, wait, is that your opinion or what you think people think?
Right.
So yeah, I will try to clarify.
So I do want to ask about the follow-up questions because it's interesting.
Sure.
So you get the questions from the audience, mm-hmm. and then the follow-up questions you build, right?
Yes.
To get, like, so what's your tactic?
I have in my mind, over the years? When somebody responds... Someone will flash in my mind who's on the right, who's on the left, who's from Sweden, who's whatever. Something I've heard in the past. What would they want to know? And I try to vary it between right and left. So no matter what you say, I try, not always, but sometimes I don't think of something. But if somebody gives a very right-wing response or a very left-wing response, I try to use the opposite argument, which is rarely my argument, actually. Once in a while, it is my argument, actually, once in a while. But usually it's somebody else's. I don't actually believe half the stuff I'm saying, like when I challenge them. And the idea is, the biggest example is when I was acting like, I think I called myself a dick, totally. I was an asshole to these kids. They were like 16, 17, but they just had these ridiculous views. Palestinian kids had these ridiculous views of Israelis. So in my head, I was pretending to be that right wing, person with, you know, the Arabs are the real occupiers. They came from Arabia. They're not really from here. I don't actually believe that at all. I think that's a silly argument. But I thought, how would they react if they knew about it? That's what's going through my mind. How is the person in front of me going to react if they knew what other people thought, whatever the opposite is? That's the idea. And it's to challenge them. It's also to get more information, because part of it is people say they use slogans again. And it doesn't necessarily mean what the person hearing it thinks it means. So I try to clarify. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So that's the idea.
So sometimes it's confrontational and trying to have them elaborate on why they think the specific, because they have to break down the slogan they're talking about, right, to represent it in a way. But then the other thing you said is about information or about what another person might want to hear or a different opinion.
Yeah.
I think something you could take for questions in general, like how to not go to the confirmation bias. So you gave me an answer. It fits my point of view. I'll ask the question that would differ if he agrees with a different statement, then... There's that problem and gapping that information gap.
Yeah. Great. I don't do it for everyone, because sometimes at the beginning of a question I just try to get a sense of the different views.
Right.
Because to show to the I'm just asking now about what do Israelis think of civil marriage, making it legal. And so for the first few, I usually just kinda say why and keep it kind of objective. And then towards the end, it's more when I challenge people much more. So, for example, and this is a bit of confirmation bias in a sense, meaning I want people to endorse civil marriage because I think I personally think it's important. So the first one or two who said, yes, I believe in it, I didn't go on to say, yeah, but won't that ruin Judaism? But I will for the next. Absolutely. Right. Because there's also, just being combative for the sake of being combative is not also always a good idea.
Right.
But I will for one or two, sure. Yeah. And mostly if someone's... that's why I like when people come with me to ask the questions. Because someone who's the opposite of me is even better. Because they're going to bring up points that I hadn't really thought of. Or they're going to hear things that I wasn't cluing into. Or so I... That's the idea.
Are the questions the same? Do you have questions that you ask both Palestinians and Israeli the same questions?
Rarely. Sometimes I do. Rarely. Right. If I think it'll benefit understanding, then I will. So, for example, best example is I asked Palestinians, what do they think of gay people? And the results were horrific to me because I'm a gay person. And then I was challenged, why didn't I ask Israelis? And I'm thinking, I live here as a gay person. Yeah, there's religious people who think I'm an animal, but who cares? I mean, you could do anything in this country. Nobody cares. Nobody, you know, people accept you. Even if I married a guy who was religious or came from a religious family, they'd accept me. It's completely different. So, but after like 2-3 years of all these Palestinians saying, aha, you're afraid of asking. I said, you know what? I'll do it. I'll ask. And so I figured I'll ask only the most conservative people, because what's the point of asking a bunch of Tel Aviv people, what do they think of gay people? Yeah. It's just so, who cares? So I asked settlers and I asked Jerusalem people, and it was actually, I got quite nice responses, or nicer than I expected.
Right. I think it's also...
Without them knowing I'm gay, by the way, because then someone's going to say, they knew you were gay.
Okay.
No, actually, towards the end, at the end, after, I would say, and by the way, I'm gay, just so you know. And they were always like, really? Oh my God.
You don't, where are the horns, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
you don't pass it. Cause I'm taking it more of a fluffy way in a way, cause mm-hmm. most of the questions are on the conflict and are, very emotional or very historically, charged, but asking like, what's your favorite movie, or you know, like what's your favorite career? What would you? When did you help a person lately?
Mm-hmm.
And then just really putting a flashlight not on them being either Israeli or Palestinians, sure. but as a universal question, and everyone has it their viewpoint. Because in a way, that's like showcasing and having more salience to different perspectives and getting...
Mm-hmm. It humanizes. That's what I'm hoping for. I mean, even though a lot of people say just, horrible things, it still humanizes a little bit.
For sure. I'm just, contemplating if taking it to just very apolitical has also its political
shape.
It does.
Right? I think because nobody else is asking all these questions... And in theory, the media is supposed to be asking these questions, but it just gets so filtered through their own views or through whatever their editor thinks. And I know this from experience because people have done stories about me, and there were things that they reported that never happened. They did not happen that way. And it pissed me off because I asked why they did, and they said, well, it sounds more exciting that way.
Right.
Because they have to get clicks, or they have to sell newspapers or whatever. But you know, I'll ask the nice questions every so often. But it's really just dehumanized because it becomes a little exhausting sometimes asking always awful questions. But I really want to know, it's the hard stuff I want to know. That's the way more interesting to me.
Right.
But I obviously from views, the things that sell are Jesus, the religious stuff. Someone has to do a Ask a Jew, Ask a Muslim project. I'm just not that interested in religion. So I throw it in every so often. But all the philosophical, theological aspects, I don't care that much, but I do them because those are the ones that get more views, by the way. Or hate. It's very sad. Sex and hate. Would you date? Would you marry? That sort of thing gets tons of views. And do you hate this group? Gets right. a lot of views.
Yeah,
we're a very sad species. This is awful.
And we're building algorithms to feed that monster, right?
Yes.
So you're... getting polarized views because you get clicks on things you like and you agree with. And that's why I think the world is in need of this kind of project or illuminating different points of view and regular, normalized, not violent sex. Or
And I hope, and although it's not happening, is that the person who's obsessed with Jesus and wants to know why the Jews don't believe in Jesus will also just watch what their favorite food is, or do they blame Germans for the Holocaust today, or just... Oh, I never thought of that. Let me see what people said.
Right.
That's what I'm hoping. It doesn't seem to be happening because I get 2 million views on the Jesus ones, and I get maybe, you know, 6,000 or 7,000 views on the actual, right. To me, the things that make an impact or a difference or things that are relevant to today. So, which, you know, makes me a bit sad, but, you know.
Yeah, I think just also getting the questions from the audience makes it mm-hmm. relevant to them. And yeah. also, it's a bridge, right? It's hard to sit down and say, okay, let's see if Israelis still hate Nazis for the mm-hmm. next 15 minutes, right? So yeah. it's something to think about. Yeah, I was thinking, it reminds me of the, there's a out-group homogeneity effect, which is the long version and big word of saying all Chinese look alike. Okay,
oh, so yeah,
we,
yeah.
right, we know that effect, or mm-hmm. you could say for American, all Israeli soldiers look alike, but mm-hmm. for us in Israel, you could by the color of his kumta or what shoes he wears and different mm-hmm. brigades his, and same on Orthodox Jews, right? Mm-hmm. So for yes. people, it could be Haridim, but there's yep. kind of signs, and if you know...
I have to bring a religious friend with me when we go to the Haredi areas, because I have no clue. They all look the same to me. They all look. Yeah. He's like, how do you not see the difference? I'm like, not my world.
Yeah, so...
So I have to bring him as my helper.
Yeah, so it's a bias, right? Our brain is wired this way to be lazy and save up energy, and we take stereotypes, and we don't have enough motivation to code those stuff and to differentiate between different Chinese, right? Mm-hmm. And the way we do it, there's competing theories, but one of them is reminded exemplars, right? So if you have more examples okay. Of a different species or a different group and more interactions, you get to differentiate and remember, okay, so he, I don't know, the clerk on the in the market, or the guy I work with, or the guy in the parenting conference with me, mm-hmm. they have their different perspective, and it's important for me to know who's who, right? Mm-hmm. And you break down the teams and break down the stereotypic thought, but it's it takes up the energy, and just bringing more. I'm saying now that there's the wall, right? Or in different conflict areas, there's not much going around and meeting people,
and there's no interaction between Israelis and Palestinians today. Yeah,
right. And then the where are your horns and being demonized as an Israeli or as a Palestinian, you don't get to see the different exemplars of regular people
and the subtleties and the yes.
Yeah, and I'm taking
all the nuances
right, and I'm taking this also to inter-Israeli debates after 10 years of Bibi being in power. There's a lot of gaps inside the different demographic groups, right? And just having a more open discussion and meeting other people, maybe on their experience, on universal experiences, mm-hmm. could bridge that and saying, okay, we're in Israel. Yala, bon aseh tov, that kind of way.
Let's see.
Oof, we don't have much time, but there are a couple of questions maybe on the conflict to get your viewpoint. No?
If you want, sure. Yeah, right? I keep telling people I'm just another person with an opinion. Doesn't mean I know anything better.
Right. I think like the edge you have is maybe being both studying it and being around here in the conflict resolution in mm-hmm. a way, and also just talking to a lot of people and taking
that sense, yes.
So we'll start from a kind of theoretical aspect, but what do you think question asking helps in conflict resolution?
Oh, that's a good one. Okay, so the idea is not mine, I mean, obviously, but I got it from a radio psychologist years and years and years ago, Dr. Joy Brown, who's no longer alive, which is too bad, and she talked about relationships, like marriage, boyfriend, girlfriend, that type of relationship. And she would, because people will go off on a tangent, and he did this, and I did that, and she would stop them all the time and say, form a question. Boil it down to a one, and then they would go on and go, yeah, but he, but, and there's stop. You need to boil it down to a question. And the purpose of that, which I figured out, is it focuses you. What do you really want to know in all this? Is it he didn't buy it? Is it he did buy this? Is it, what's the issue? You need to focus it down. And I think that's important in conflict resolution, Because as even forgetting about what theoreticians and people who work in the field do, just people who talk about it, we go off on these tangents and it's, you know, what's important to me is not important to you. Like, I'm not a religious person, but maybe you are, and the land is important and it's sacred. And we need to boil down, what are we even talking about if we want to have a discussion about this? And the easiest way is through a question. It also, in video or in audio, it also stops people from going off on who knows what. If you just keep bringing them back to the question, it keeps them focused on something. Now, it doesn't mean that's the whole story. Obviously, it isn't. Couldn't be. But it creates a certain amount of order. Because what always happens is this chaos of going from topic to topic to topic, and no one really hearing each other, no one really listening, and no one making themselves really clear. So having a question is really important. And so that is I stole from somebody, but it's my little gimmick of just keeping it focused within the framework of a question. I think that should be used. I was involved in a dialogue group in Canada between Arabs and Jews, and I kept bringing that up going, because people would just go off on a rant. And I was like, could we just bring it down to one question and then people can give an opinion? That'll be much simpler than everyone going off on a rant that includes 20 different things, because I don't even know what to focus on. And in each one of those, as we all know, if you have, let's say your parents, I don't know, go off on some political rant, you might focus on X and they meant Y. And nothing ever gets dealt with.
Yeah, I think both the focus and the subject and matter is super important. And also it's much easier to agree on the question because it's legitimate that you have different answers, right?
Yeah.
And the answers or your viewpoint isn't attacked.
Mm-hmm.
There is important to say that it's important how you frame the questions, right? And there is a lot of power and...
Yes, absolutely. And I do ask them the way they're asked, as much as possible. So, yeah. So the worst one to ever ask was, why do you treat the Palestinians the way the Nazis treated the Jews? And I framed it specifically that way. And I knew people would get offended.
Right.
And I felt even worse because I knew I was asking... people who came from Holocaust survivors. I knew, I could tell who I was asking. And it was on purpose, actually, because it is so, that specific statement is so believed outside of Israel, I have to deal directly with it. Talking around it is not gonna do anything.
Wow, okay, so mind blown. You went up to a Holocaust survivor?
Well, I didn't specifically say, are you a Holocaust survivor?
Right, but
I could tell they were Ashkenazi, and I could tell chances are.
Right.
Yeah, and I specifically chose them. That was on purpose.
So, both... Maybe in a sense, there's a fault in that question, right? And the straight answer would be, yeah, but it's not like this and that.
Somebody gave that response.
Right.
Yeah. Where? Show me the trains that bring Palestinians to death camps. Show me the firing squad. Show me the legitimate answers. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even somebody saying, I cannot believe you're asking that question, is a legitimate answer.
Right.
And actually, I'm actually surprised by Israelis. That they don't get more mad at Palestinians. And sometimes, once in a while they do, but I even expect it. I kind of hope that they'll do it. Because sometimes to someone who's in the UK asking the question, they don't even really understand that to people here it's offensive. But then I'll try to bring the person I'm asking, I'll go, okay, it's offensive, I get it. Let's move on. How would you respond?
Nice, yeah. And also it's a lesson for the guy that sent that answer, right?
Absolutely.
So he understands.
Absolutely, yes, that's the idea.
Okay, maybe what can we do to help Israeli people?
Answer my questions, first of all, if you see me on the street. It's actually amazing because people think I'm popular and people know me. Maybe 1 in 200 people even have heard of, they go, oh, you're that guy. 1 in 200 of Israelis, and they're the people who most watch my videos. So... spreading. Well, on the one hand, it's really nice to be anonymous and that nobody knows, because then they're not set up for what they think they should say. So that's good.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, 70% of people say they don't want to answer on camera because they don't trust media. I don't know why. They feel self-conscious.
No, I understand. I mean, I think the rule that you have that nothing gets edited out or edited at all.
Unless somebody says, because it just happened, somebody said, you know what, take me out. And I'm like, okay,
right,
I will. Always do.
But having, because the power of editing is, yeah, you can ask a question and get whatever answer.
And I try to assure them I do not do that. Yeah. In fact, I'm against that. Something drives me nuts. But yes, they don't believe me. So, and you know, why would they? So in terms of answer my questions and answer them honestly, I want to know what people think. The other thing, well, if they know really, really rich people, help support the project, because I have all these ideas for, I'd love to do a production company that looks at the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in different ways. For example, I'd love to do like a Netflix type series, like, or YouTube, doesn't matter. It should be free to people, not like a film that goes to Cinematheque because then people have to pay and it's, you know, I want it available, which talks about elements of the conflict. And it's through what people, the first part will be what do people think about it. For example, where does our water come from? You open your tap in Tel Aviv, somebody's in Ariel, in a settlement, they open their tap and somebody's in Ramallah. Where does it come from the source? Where does it go to the tap? That's the example I always give. Because the perception from Palestinians, to give you an example, is that the settlers have this huge tap and they turn off and on their water because they're evil and they hate the Palestinians. And that's the perception, I mean, I'm exaggerating a bit, but really that's the perception of most Palestinians. They think the settlers control everything. And that can't be true, first of all. But in between truth and myth is a lot of politics and cultural aspects and even some racism that's going, I'm sure is going on in terms of why my friends in Ramallah don't have 24-hour a day running water. They do not. Nobody in the West Bank does, or very few people in the West Bank do. And is the reason infrastructure? Is the reason they're not getting enough water? What are the reasons? I want to know. And that I would love to do something along those lines of looking at what people think. So it's a lot of myths and a lot of conspiracy theories versus what we can actually figure out. And it means, like, just because somebody tells me something doesn't mean it's the answer. I'll go check out another 12 experts on every side. And then let's go see if what they're saying, if it's something provable. You know, we just installed this whole infrastructure in this area. I'm going to go speak to the people in that area. Do you have new right. infrastructure? I want to know, are they full of shit, or maybe they're not even lying. They just think something is true. Cause there's so much that's said in this conflict that people believe is going on. That's, you know, maybe not entirely true or even maybe true. There's always a grain of truth, but there's a lot of aspects that are being, people just either don't know about or just not saying. I want to look into that. That, to me, is the most interesting thing about this conflict.
Yeah, the example of there are camels in Israel, but no, I do not ride a camel to school,
yes,
right?
Yes,
that kind of question is being asked, so you get all the different shades of bizarre.
I don't know if I'd specifically, although, you know, that comes up a lot, so maybe I will ask about that. But no, but the idea is understanding what's going on. Can you prove it is going on? Because it's interesting to know. And then we can only... So, for example, like infrastructure in the Arab sector in Israel, whether we're talking about Jerusalem or Arab villages or cities, is their infrastructure really being repaired? Because there's all this money now coming from the government for the last few years. Is it happening? I don't know. You ask them, for example, I did. Right. They all said no. And I'd say, oh, there's no new roads, no new schools. I go, oh, yeah, there is a new school. Oh, yeah, they just repaired our road. So people are not connecting things. And I'm not saying I want to make Bibi look really good and, you know, he's giving all this money. I just want to know, does the person who lives in Kalanswa and me, do we have the same access to resources in that sense? Meaning, can we get certain similar jobs? Does he have running water? Is the electricity working properly? What's going on? Is policing, this is now a big issue, is there policing in their community? You know, who's getting what in the society? That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah, I think just getting people on the side of both getting the information and understanding the more complex situation and being involved in the minimal way of making it better and having, like, essentially just to begin with good intentions to the other side in a way, or
that's huge.
Trying that's building big enough, the trust by seeing different aspects. We'll say, but yeah, it's complicated, we won't solve that. And
yeah, but these have to be talked about. I'll just give you this example that keeps coming up and I don't know what to do with it. Is I speak to non-Ethiopian Israelis and I ask them about Ethiopians. And yeah, I get a little bit of, well, they've gone too far with the violence, or, you know, the protests, because I asked specifically about protests, for example, or whatever. But the intention is, no, we support them. We support, we don't want racism. We don't think, you know, and I'll ask things like, would it be okay if your brother or sister or son or daughter, whatever, married somebody Ethiopian? And so far, everyone has said yes, and I believe them. I don't think anyone was lying to me. When I speak to Ethiopians, they don't believe it. at all. It is, they, even when I ask them, the reason there's not that many Ethiopians in the videos is I ask them a lot and they will not speak on camera. They think everyone is against them. To me, it is about them forming their identity as Israelis and as Jews, as an Ashkenazi Jew in Canada. I come from a family who thinks everyone hates you and everyone hates right. the Jews. They're kind of doing the same within Israel. At least that's my take on it.
Yeah,
right?
there's a evolution of Ashkenazi and then Mizrahim
exactly.
and then
exactly. and they have real like in that sense. Yes, the Mizrahim were screwed over by the Ashkenazi. The Ashkenazi were screwed over by the non-Jews. Yeah, there's elements of truth in it. It's not that it isn't that it doesn't exist, but in the day-to-day, I mean, I could give examples of actual racism, but in the day-to-day, most people actually have very nice intentions, which impresses me. I actually have to say, Israelis and even Palestinians sometimes, they talk tough, they do have nice intentions. They really do want to get along with each other. When you have these small groups that are kind of finding their way, the ideas of being hated or being put down get, I don't even want to say exaggerated, because it's not, I'm not saying they're lying. They're right in some ways, but they're seeing it in a very skewed way. And I'm struggling with, I want everyone to be having that conversation, because I'm picking up on, you have the best of intentions. I have no idea what your view is on Ethiopians or whatever, but I'm just going to make the assumption that, yeah, if your daughter married somebody Ethiopian, okay, you know, nice guy, who cares? It's not a racial thing.
Yeah.
And from them thinking, no, nobody wants to marry with us.
So
there's a gap here, and that I can see blowing up. That's why these things keep blowing up, is that people don't speak, and even if they do, they get off on, well, you were violent. No, I wasn't violent. They get stuck on some small aspect when they're missing that the 95%, they agree on everything, and right. they get along, and it should be okay.
I agree. I think, but the thing is, I want to emphasize, I think, them feeling that way isn't skewed in any way. It's like their legitimate point of view.
Yeah.
And also, sure. in a way, a lot of the times we both try to chivalrize ourselves. I mean, yeah. I would be okay for with sure. that. I had this burst a couple of years back on feminism, right? So an epiphany, yeah, it's not okay to be bad to women. Wow, okay. And
you shouldn't know that.
Yeah, but the thing is, everyone has done stuff, and everyone, and like there's different aspects of it, mm-hmm. and saying even stuff that I'm not aware of or wasn't aware that were offensive, you stop doing. Mm-hmm. And also by Ethiopians, right? So I'm super lefty, super liberal and everything, but you have this stereotypical point of view and your mind work that way, mm-hmm. and you do get these eureka moments of, wow, I was almost racist here.
I do it too. We all do it. That's normal. They do it, by the way, Ethiopians do it about other people. Everybody does that. Right. That's human nature. We should all be thinking about it and catching ourselves doing it. And still, I come back to the point that most of us, 95% of it, we really do, there shouldn't be a conflict in that sense. There shouldn't be. And the aspects of racism, for example, if Ethiopian or an Arab or I'm trying to think of other groups would have a hard time getting an apartment in Tel Aviv, for example. I can see that happening. Yeah. I can see people being, I'm not sure if I trust their, and judging by their whole sector. Yeah, those are real. I'm not saying that's not. I'm saying that from examples, personal and everyone we know, I'm sure, most of it is people do want to do the best for others. As long as it doesn't cost them too much. That's where it always comes down to with Israelis and Palestinians. As long as it doesn't cost me too much. I don't mean in money. I mean in terms of, thinking, oh, it's my apartment. Oh, it's my... So those are the times we really do need to check ourselves. Absolutely. What I'm worried about is that what happens in these closed systems, Ethiopians or Arab Israelis or Palestinians or religious Jews, they create these bubbles of slogans right. about the other, and that boils over into, and a lot of times it's not exactly true. There's elements of truth, absolutely, but I wish we'd be asking each other, is that true? Do you really feel that way? I wish we would be doing that. We don't. Nobody in any society does that.
I think that brings us to the next stage of what do we want people to do more so it'll be a bit better here? So we'll finish up with that. Mm-hmm. But I think just also saying about the in-group and out-group effect, right? So your basic in-group is yourself. You'd be mm-hmm. more favorable to yourself. You'd be more favorable to your family, to the Israelis, or yeah. compared to a outside out-group,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah. That's huge here.
Yeah, and it's a
this is a tribal region.
Right.
We're all tribal.
But it's also primatical, I mean primates. It's biological,
yeah.
it's very...
Yeah, yeah.
And you see it even if you do a random grouping of different people on overestimators and underestimators of how many candies there's in the jar.
Yes, I've seen those.
And
yes.
they think favorably on their group and mm-hmm. otherwise on... And I think just remembering both that, yeah. that this is sometimes we make it up, those different groups, and of course it's based on different parameters, right? So the Ethiopians, I'm white, they're mm-hmm. black, they have black tone. There's, of course, that difference, but there's tons of stuff that we are in the same in-group, and we can talk
yes.
about that,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Judaism, Israeli,
yes.
being universal and human, and other topics we want to address, and just breaking it down by seeing different perspectives. So yeah, we usually end the episode by giving you a bit of a free audience, both to if you want to recommend anything or give people any recommendations, and also for the finish, what would you want people to ask or listen better in Israel, so we'll have a better community, like. Use questions in a way.
Okay, I don't know what I'd recommend. I have no idea. I haven't yeah. thought about that. What do people normally recommend?
It could be a book or we'll skip that.
Read.
Okay.
No, I can't think of anyone. I'm a very boring person. Other than this and work, I don't do much. What would I want people, what would my wish be in a sense
yeah,
for
I mean,
people?
If people, you know.
Think about more when you're talking about politics, think about the impact that has. On others, not just your group, on other groups that live here. I mean, let's say we're talking about, because my thing is I find Israel is, yes, it's a democracy, but it's a very flawed democracy. And what I mean by that, I don't mean the actual institutions, because they're actually more or less okay. I mean, we have good systems. It's how people think. They think in populist ways, and that scares me a lot. That's a personal thing. I find people here don't understand what a real liberal democracy is. They think just because the majority thinks it should be X, therefore it has to be X, and they don't understand there are other people. There are other people who think different ways, and part of liberal democracies, at least the way they are today in US, Canada, and Northern Europe, that's you have to look out for the other who's not part of the majority. You really do. And so even though, yeah, so I'll give the example I love to give is all the human rights organizations. Yeah, of course they're a little anti-Israel. Of course they're skewed. Of course they're all these things. Yeah, I criticize them too because they come speak to our students and I always bring up, yeah, but you're talking, this is not true or that's whatever. But the fact that they should exist, they absolutely have to exist because we all have to be checked. We have to have checks and balances in our country and in our lives. And so I wish people would think more about that. And instead of having that stupid, and I call them morons when they do it to me, of, yeah, Smolani, like, you yeah. trade, yeah, Bogid, in just by asking the question, that's what amazes me and all that. Just by me asking a question of, don't you think you need to give Palestinian rights? It's automatically aligned with this traitorous lefty thing. And that scares me. Because that's not good for society to be everyone on, you know, be thinking, just asking questions or questioning what's going on is somehow traitorous. That scares me in this country. So I want everybody, and chances, I'm assuming that a lot of people listen are already left-wings, but even their left-wing views, I mean, I still think the left-wing got it wrong on the Arab world and Palestinians. We shouldn't have sent Yossi Beilin to negotiate with the Palestinians. It should have been Aryeh Deri or something like that. It should have
yeah.
been someone who's Mizrahi, religious, and understands the mentality better. Not perfectly, but understands the mentality better. So there's a lot on the left, obviously, to look at. But everybody should be, including me, including, you know, I like to be challenged too.
Yeah, I'll take that. Not being afraid to be challenged by questions and challenging by questions and trying to sharpen our answers and seeing if what we think or what our parents thought is still accurate today.
Yeah.
Corey, what a great, great talk. Thank you for your time. We talked a bit about the great project, and we'll put up links. Try to check them out. There's a ton. It's a 7-year project. There's thousands of thousands or
it's about 850 now videos at this point.
They won't run out. You could binge on it.
I'm not tired. I love it. I'm having a great time doing it.
Posted up that you're coming a bit late because I was in Romania. But people, if you have questions for Corey, you could post it on the Facebook group. It's called Sheela Tova, a podcast al Sheelot im Asaf Cohen. Check it out. And you could ask next guest questions beforehand. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Okay. Thanks for having me on.
Shana Tova,
Chevre. Shana Tova. Alak. Very nice. Thank you.